I'm Sean, I'm alcoholic.
Hey, Sean.
My story begins back in early childhood. My parents got divorced when I was a really young age, around 4 or 5 years old. We were up north, that's where my father's family's from, and after the divorce, my mother moved down here to the Norfolk area, and we moved in with my uncle. My mother was a really heavy drinker for my entire childhood. I used to initially, back then, if I would get sick or get a cold or something like that, or a sore throat, my mother would give me like a shot of brandy. And that was, you know, very young, 5, 6 years old. I'm not really sure what age that was. But even way back then, I remember how, you know, I felt warm, and it made me feel all warm and fuzzy and comfortable. And I really liked the sensation I felt when she gave me that. So I kind of just remember the sensation it gave me. And just coming up through the academies and all that, in junior high school, my mother drank daily, and I would steal her drink, her liquor and stuff like that. And I would just water her bottles of liquor down with water, you know, to put them back to the level they were. And that was a kind of a daily thing. So my alcoholism started at a very young age. I wasn't aware, of course. I was so young that I was an alcoholic, but that followed me right through high school and everything. I had kids very young also. I had a girlfriend, and we were sexually active when I was like 11 years old, 12 years old. I had my first daughter when I was 15 years old, and then a son at 17 and another son at 19. So I had a lot going on early on. It didn't slow my drinking down. I dropped out of school and went and got a job and to help take care of. I still stayed at home with my parents, and both our families helped kind of take care of the kids. I wasn't like out on my own or anything. But the drinking just escalated over time. Just a lot of drinking and whatnot. I got married actually when I was 18 years old, and we did go out on our own, and I got a job with the government, and was actually in the apprenticeship here at Norfolk Naval Shipyard. And I just continued to drink daily and somehow managed that and kept the job and did well in the apprenticeship program and kind of excelled in that. Kept drinking daily, and the government actually did some like a reduction in force, so I got laid off at the shipyard, but they actually offered me relocation. And about that time, drugs is part of my story too. I left that kind of out earlier on. My mom also smoked marijuana, and I would always break into her bedroom and steal her marijuana, and I smoked marijuana daily also. Couldn't really replace that with water, but somehow I got away with kind of stealing a daily supply of it and used marijuana too. After I got laid off at the shipyard, I got relocated to Mississippi, and I thought that would be a good opportunity to kind of turn my life around. Where I went to go work was Meridian Naval Air Station in Mississippi. Real remote place, you know. It was a great opportunity that I had. I lived there a couple years, and then I started getting into harder drugs. I think I just felt kind of alone and separated from my friends and family that I grew up with. So I started doing kind of anything that was available. I tried anything while I was down there. I did heroin, meth. Crack was a big thing back then. This is back in the 80s when it kind of really started hitting the streets really bad. And I found myself still drinking daily. And it seemed like when I got drunk, that's when I'd really go out and start using the hard drugs and stuff like that. It just made it, I guess, easier for me to do, let my guard down and stuff like that. And my wife and I, we fought daily. We always had money problems because of my drug and alcohol use. Even though I did have a good job with the government and made good money, you know, especially for my age and everything, I was really blessed by my higher power back then, and didn't realize it, how good I did have it. But we always, more so her, because my family wasn't very financially well off, but her family was. So she would call her grandmother, which was really financially well off, and her father and stuff, and we'd get help kind of pretty much on a weekly basis at one point to help pay our immediate bills and stuff. And we'd fight every day, you know, the alcohol, you know, I'd get angry when I got drunk. I was kind of like a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, you know, the nicest guy in the world sober, but you get, you know, a 12 pack or something in me, and especially with some hard drugs mixed in there, I really turn into the biggest a-hole that you can imagine. And she put up with that for a few years, but eventually that just got too much for her. And I resigned from my position there, tried to kind of run away from the drug use and alcohol and stuff. And as soon as we got back here in town and my wife got back around her family, she pretty much kicked me out and asked for a divorce. That put me out on the streets. I was homeless at that point, really in despair. I really didn't have an option of moving back in with my mom. She kind of was all about herself and her drinking and drug use and whatnot. So I was out on the streets for, I don't know, 6 months or so, kind of staying where I could, couch surfing and stuff. And my brother was kind enough to let me stay with him for a little while till I got another job local and got back on my feet. But I still was daily drinking and also still using the hard drugs and all that. I realized running from, you know, I went to Mississippi to get away from them. That was part of the reason I took that relocation. And then I came back to Virginia and was right back in it. And I realized that I couldn't run away from my problems. That they, you know, if I wanted something, I could find it. And somehow as a drug addict, an alcoholic, you always know where to go or who to talk to. Or it's crazy looking back now that, you know, I could just look at somebody and see if they had something and who to talk, you know, who to ask or something, especially for like hard drugs and all that. It's just crazy how people kind of see that in each other without just, you know, just by a look and no communication. But so I got back on my feet and got a job, and that my alcoholism just carried on. I finally had the courage, or I guess just got tired of using the drugs. The hard drugs. I still kept smoking marijuana daily and drinking daily, and it was kind of not too bad in the beginning, not in the beginning, but in my mid-20s into my 30s, you know, I did it not socially, it was definitely excessively, but I kind of justified it that, you know, I'd look at other people that drank and used drugs and, you know, my friends that, you know, and people I knew from school and whatnot. And I always compared myself to them that, you know, I'm not as bad as he is. You know, he drinks a half gallon of liquor a day. I only drink beer or you know, he does this or that, and I only smoke weed or whatever. And I kind of justified that in my mind that it was okay to live like I was living. So I always pretty much kept my drinking to a nightly thing. I would never drink at work. I would always wait till I was off of work and was at home, and then I'd drink as much as I possibly could, looking back. But and I wouldn't even I kind of had this deadline in my mind for many, many years that I wouldn't drink till after 3 p.m. even on the weekends. You know, I was really proud of that, that hey, even though it's Saturday or Sunday, I'm not going to have a drink till after 3. So I kind of justified my alcoholism in that way too, that I had it under control enough that I could, you know, follow that. And as time went on and the decades passed, because now I'm in my 40s or really early 50s, so we're looking at, you know, 40 years of drinking and using drugs. I'm not doing that anymore, or I'm not going to do it till after this time, or I'm not going to drink at work. All those rules I made for myself just all went away, and I started drinking on the job. 3 o'clock didn't mean anything to me anymore. I would drink a lot more and a lot longer, a lot more excessively, pretty much, you know, around the clock. Somehow still was able to keep a job. I don't really know if my higher power was with me the whole time. I know that now looking back, but another one of my rules I made was I'd never drink and drive, and that went out the window too. I totaled a couple vehicles, and in my alcoholic mind, I justified the wrecking the vehicles that I was tired. I just got off work and things like that. And, you know, looking back, that was definitely not the case. I was still hungover or intoxicated. You know, I got in a wreck in Richmond, and that was about 5 years ago. And I told myself that the reason that happened is because I didn't know where I was at. I wasn't familiar with the roads and all, but that wasn't the case. I was drunk as heck and had gotten off work, had been drinking at work and got off work. I actually owned my own business at this point. And I told my workman, and I'm lucky that I didn't kill the person that I T-boned at a stop sign. I'm pretty sure I blacked out or passed out or something like that, and I ran a stop sign. And I was driving a big conversion van, and it totally blew out the front end of the van. And the gentleman that I hit, I guess, had a newer vehicle with a lot of safety features, because he walked away unscathed. And I'm calling my wife. I had remarried at this point. I left that kind of out of my story. I guess that was when I was around 30 years old. I remarried, and that's to the wife that I currently have now. And we had a daughter. She's 21 now. So this is 21 years ago. She was actually pregnant when we married. So 21 years ago, we married. I'm just throwing that out there. So I'm talking to my wife on the phone, and just telling her that, you know, hey, this happened. I'm going to jail. I know I am, because I was dead to rights, drunk as heck. I'd gotten off work that day. It was probably 9 o'clock that night. And like I said, I own my own business, so I was able to drink from the day the minute I got on the job till I left the job. And I worked long hours, especially when I was out of town. So I'd been drinking probably for about 14, 13 hours, so I was completely crap-faced. And so I was on the phone with her and telling her that I was going to jail, you know, and I was asking the driver, was he okay? But I was slurring my words, stumbling around and stuff. And my wife was like, you know, stop talking to him, you know, you know, shut your mouth, you know. She knew how bad I was off. She actually worked with me a lot, and she drove me around. But that night, earlier that day, she had to come back to town for a family matter. So I didn't have her there that night to take me to go get dinner and make sure I wasn't doing anything stupid, getting myself in trouble. And so the police officer showed up and the fire department and all the emergency services all showed up, and I'm stumbling around slurring and, you know, telling the cop, the officer, that I'm going to jail, you know I am, and he's like, just give me your license and all that, and I'm not sure why, but I didn't go to jail that night. He actually had another officer come that was expert in sobriety tests and all that. And he took me to the side of the sidewalk on the side of the road right beside where I had the accident. And he told me that he was gonna give me these failed sobriety tests. And, you know, I'm telling him, hey, you know, y'all got me. I'm going to jail. I'm drunk. You know, there was no way around it. Bloodshot eyes, slurred speech. You could smell it coming out of my pores. But for some reason, the officer, you know, did a light test with my eyes and everything, and hold your head back and look at the light and follow it with your eyes and all. And I know, I just know I was failing miserably, there was no doubt. And then he told me that he was gonna do a walking test with me, and then like hold my foot up 6 inches from the ground and all that. And he looked down at my feet, and I was wearing flip-flops, and I was like, I was about to pick my foot, actually I did pick my foot up. And he said, oh, no, you can't do that. I can't have you do that. And I was shocked. I was like, why not? He's like, because you're wearing flip-flops, man. I couldn't even do that in flip-flops. So, you know, I was just in disbelief that, you know, I wasn't going to jail. So they wrote me a ticket for improper driving, and van's totaled, and I'm in Richmond, so I'm out of town, so I really had no way back to the hotel and everything. So the officer ended up giving me a ride back to the hotel, and just kind of told me, you know, hey, you need to get your life together. So I really feel like that God put him in my path, because I mean, I really should have went to jail. I really should have went to prison for that. You know, that would have been my second DUI, but the first one I had gotten was back in my early 20s. Kind of going back, I don't mean to bounce back and forth, but I left kind of that out of the equation. When I was in my early 20s, I got a DUI, and the judge sentenced me to go to AA meetings. And I went to an AA meeting because I was court ordered to do that. And the first meeting I went to, I missed a great opportunity. You know, this is 10 years of drinking, you know, even though I'm only 22, you know, I was drinking at 12 years old, so kind of almost daily drinking. I went to the meeting, and there was another guy there that kind of was court ordered too. And he told me that, hey, you know, what are you here for? And I told him, I said, you know, I got to get my paper signed. And he's like, oh, no, you don't, man. You don't need to do that. That's these meetings are anonymous. You know, all you got to do is you initial a paper. You know, nobody knows who runs these meetings. So I missed a great opportunity to recognize that I was an alcoholic and I had a problem with alcohol. And being smarter than the program and everything, that was a one meeting, one and done. Didn't really listen to anything. Got out of there as quick as I could. I had my paper signed, and then from there on out, I signed it every week and gave it to the judge, and he dismissed my charges. So I had another really bad accident here in town also after getting off work, drinking all day. I was actually driving my daughter's truck, and I totaled that vehicle out too. And none of these things, you know, really, I was in denial that I was an alcoholic and stuff, so I really didn't recognize that alcohol was the reason for these accidents. And thank God that they were all just single vehicle, other than the accident I described in Richmond. This was a single vehicle with the Jersey wall. But I totally totaled that vehicle too. I'm not sure how fast. It was another blackout thing where I blacked out and I just came to. And amazingly, when I came to, you know, there's beer cans all over the floor, and I don't know, my weed pipe, whatever else that I had in the truck, you know, drug paraphernalia and all that's just scattered everywhere. I got beer all over me, and I had an open container in my lap or in the console or something like that. So I opened the door, there's cans falling out the door and everything, and a couple pulled up, and asked me, was I okay? They kind of pulled up beside me. I was in the breakdown laying against the Jersey wall. Truck looked like a soda can. So, you know, I thank God that I didn't die in that accident. So I just looked at the couple and I said, hey, you know, I need a ride home. And the guy said, okay, no problem. And opened his door and told me to get on in, and he gave me a ride home. So I got back to the house, and next thing I know, my phone's ringing and my wife's answered the phone. I'm already in bed. You know, I gotta go pass out at this point, you know. And she said, the police are on the phone. And I was like, you know, I don't want to talk to them. And they said, well, they didn't want to talk to you. And I said, well, I'm not talking to them. So she gave him my social security number and everything, so that I don't know how that all worked out, but I didn't get, the police never came to the house or ticketed me or anything, so I really got away with a lot of things that I think that if they went the other way, maybe I would have opened my eyes and recognized and acknowledged, you know, the problem I had. But for, there's a reason why that I seemed to get away with all the crap that I was going, you know, doing. And so all the way up to June 13th of last year, you know, I was daily drinking. I'd stopped using hard drugs probably really early into my second marriage. So it had been 20 years, 18 years since I'd done any really heavy drugs, but I continued to smoke marijuana on a daily basis and drink daily. And my wife smoked too, so they ended up legalizing marijuana here in Virginia, so I got my medical marijuana card and took that to the bank. So, you know, it's legal now. I don't have to worry. I always had anxiety and stuff that I'd get a drug screen at my job and lose my job. I had a good, still do have a good position, a good job here local. So June 13th of last year, it was my birthday, you know, just another excuse or reason to celebrate. I didn't need a reason to drink. I drank when I was mad. I drank when I was happy, when I was sad. When it was in a celebration or not, it really didn't matter at that point. It was just daily. And it just got more and more excessive. And my 52nd birthday, June 13th, 2022, I really put one on, and that says a lot for me because I put one on every day, and I don't remember anything. And I remember starting to drink and all that, but I don't remember the night at all. My blackout started being pretty much nightly and a lot more frequent. I don't remember going to bed and passing out or whatever. I just remember waking up in the morning. And so the morning of the 14th, I got up, my wife had a big bruise on her arm. And that's something else I prided myself on. I might be an a-hole, but I don't, you know, beat on my wife or anything. And I asked her how it happened. It really scared me when I seen it. It was a real black, purple bruise on the back of her arm above her elbow. So when I saw that, you know, she didn't say anything. She was really meek and everything, you know, didn't want to piss me off, you know. So she didn't say a word about it. I happened to notice it. And apparently, I was, you know, blacked out, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, and flipping out on her. And she was coming into the bedroom to get her stuff, her pillow or blanket or something, so she could sleep on the couch, which happened very frequently. And I slammed the door behind me, and the door caught her and gave her a horrible bruise. So that day there is when I decided that, you know, I admitted that I was powerless over alcohol and I had a problem. And it just really broke my heart that I hurt her physically. I had been hurting her emotionally and everything daily for a very long time. And I always felt guilt and remorse the next morning when I was semi-sober, because I never really truly was sober. I always had some kind of blood alcohol content in my system, I'm sure, as heavy as I drank. But, you know, all day at work, you know, I'd feel horrible, or the days I didn't drink in the mornings and whatnot. I did have a job at that point where I couldn't drink at work. So I would be alcohol free during the work hours, which is an 8-hour day. But I'd always feel terrible, you know. I'd text her and tell her I loved her and how sorry I was, and I truly was sorry, but I just had no control over my alcoholism. And so that day I decided that I'd go to an AA. I just remembered back in my early 20s when the judge sent me to that meeting. And when I went to the meeting, I always remembered that all the people in the meeting look older. You know, thinking that I wasn't like they were, you know. I was young, I'm in my 20s. So, you know, I didn't fit in there, you know, I wasn't like these people. So in my 50s, I kind of, you know, felt like, hey, you know, I look like those people looked back then. And other than they had hope and everything on their face, and I was surprised how happy everybody was. I thought to myself back then, because I didn't really listen too much, but I did notice that everybody was happy and smiling. And I just thought it was crazy that, you know, a big group of drunks, you know, would all be happy. You know, I thought it'd be more of a, you know, just a different atmosphere. So I remember that, so I decided I'd try AA that morning, and I went to a meeting that next day, and that was the last day I had a drink. I started going to meetings, and I kind of sat in the back of the room and everything and got out of there as quick as I could. And didn't speak to anybody. I still have a little bit of it, probably not a little bit. It's less than it was, but this fear of speaking in public and speaking to others, because I was isolated so much, you know, over so many years. The longer I drank, the more I isolated myself from my family and loved ones and just communicating with people at all in any form. So I'm still working on that now. The program says, the book says that one of the promises say that financial insecurity and fear of people will, I guess, go away, I believe. I'm not sure, chapter verse, but that has happened, which is why, you know, I'm here speaking tonight. This wasn't even achievable not too long ago. So Wednesday was my year anniversary abstaining from using alcohol. That's not my sobriety date though. I got a sponsor, actually I was kind of running out of those meetings, sitting in the back of the room, and I don't know how, but because I was sat right at the door. But one day, I guess it was probably my fourth or fifth meeting. I was going pretty much daily because I knew if I didn't go to the meeting, then or go to a meeting, not this meeting because this meeting was only weekly, but I was jumping around. If I couldn't go to an in-person meeting, I did a Zoom meeting or more than one Zoom meeting. I did that nightly because I really needed that. But I went to the in-person meeting. I think it was the third week I was there. I sat at the back door like I always did, didn't speak to anybody. You know, I didn't get up and get the white chip or anything. I'm sorry, I did get up and get the white chip my first meeting, which was really hard for me to do, but I really knew that, you know, after having the meeting and everything, that, you know, that I was powerless over alcohol. That was an easy step for me to admit, and that it was, I couldn't manage my own life, that alcohol had control of me. So maybe the third meeting, I was running out the door and then somebody cut me off in the hallway, which is my sponsor now. I don't know how he did that because I was sitting right at the door. So I was kind of jokingly tell people, you know, he must have crawled out a window and ran around to the front of the church, because there was really no way I could see how he could have got there. But he just introduced himself and offered to be my sponsor. I'm sure he could probably see the despair and everything I was in. I'm sure it was pretty obvious to anyone, especially to an alcoholic, you know, that had been through these things. So he was a great guy. He's walked me through the steps, and I joined the home group there. I started doing service, you know. At first, I started making coffee. Just recently, I'm the alternate for the GSR. So I volunteered for that because my sponsor was the GSR, and he's actually just getting relocated. He's in the military, so he's got another duty station. He's going, I think, to Washington State. So I volunteered basically to take his position just this past meeting, this past Wednesday at the home group. So I'm trying to do as much service as possible. I was told, my sponsor told me, you know, to just stick with the program, you know, kind of stay in the middle of the herd and do a lot, you know, a lot of listening, you know. The ME program didn't work, but this is a WE program. I initially came just to stop drinking, and I found out that this program's kind of it's spiritually based. That was really a shocker to me, you know. It's about spiritual progress, not spiritual perfection. So I'm working on that daily. I'm trying to do all the service that I can, and stick the kind of, like I said, stay in the middle of the herd and come to meetings. I try and come to them as much as possible. And if I can't, like I said earlier, if I can't do an in-person meeting, I do Zoom meetings. I love Zoom meetings. I hear a lot of negative things about them, but my hat's off to people that got sober without Zoom, because I need the extra meetings and yet hearing extra people sharing their experience, strength, and hope more often. I guess maybe I drink more often. I'm not really sure why that is, but the program's amazing. It's really changed my life. I'm my own biggest critic, so I don't really see all the positive change in me, but all my loved ones and family and friends always compliment me, and, you know, even people I haven't talked to in a while just say they see a difference in me, you know. It's really changed my life in a positive way. My wife and children are so grateful and proud of me that I've changed and turned my life around. And I haven't done it because the ME program didn't work, but the AA and my higher power has really turned things around in my life. And I heard it said, you know, don't give up before the miracle happens. Well, every day I don't drink, after so many years of drinking and using drugs, it is a miracle for me. And with the hope and help of the program, I guess I forgot to finish that statement. My new sobriety date's November 8th of this year, because I ended up putting down the plant product. I was still using the dry goods. And even though I had the medical card, I knew that was just an excuse, you know. And talking with my sponsor and everything, in the big book, it says that alcohol in any form. And I kind of related that to, you know, talking to my sponsor, you know, he said that, you know, that means any mind-altering substance. So with the help of the program, I actually stopped doing that also. The program's amazing, and it's really changed my life for the better. And I just really look forward to passing on what's so freely been given to me. The hope and the love that I see in the rooms it really baffles me on a daily basis how much care and love you get from everyone. And just taking it one day at a time, and very grateful for AA and the program and my sponsor. And I guess that's about it. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Sean.